Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hey, Joe, how are you?
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. Okay, it's 9:40 p.m. Tuesday, April 12th. I am back, ladies and gentlemen. I am back from New York and from my wife's surgery and all that. As you know, I haven't had a show in a few days. But that's okay because, you know, as always, I do this for nothing. So I always have to do it when the time permits. Rick isn't here today. He couldn't make it, so that's okay. But I do have a special guest in the studio with me, and maybe she'll be a regular as well. This is Phyllis Huster.
No, Huster.
Huster, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's
it's, all right. It's spelled H-U-S-T-E-R, so I always thought it was Huster.
That's all right.
That's all right. Okay, Phyllis Huster, and I've known her for a while. She actually helped my wife and I out when we lost our apartment up in Alpharetta. And I knew her from the Dean campaign, and now she works a lot on election reform issues. And I've been working with her. Hi, Phyllis. How you doing?
Hi, Joe. By the way, everyone needs to know what a great cook you are.
Well, thank you. Thank you. What have you had that I have made recently?
Not recently. You need to come make something, but your spaghetti is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Your meatloaf is off the map.
I haven't made the spaghetti in a while because, you know, my stomach can't handle the tomato sauce
really?
Anymore. Because I make the really, when I make the sauce, it turns out really, really thick.
I know.
And it's very acidy. When it's like that. And I just can't handle it anymore. As much as I love spaghetti, I just can't take it anymore. Which is a shame because, yeah, it does turn out well. And it's all in how you cook it. It's all in, you know, it's just cheap. It's friggin' Kroger jarred tomato sauce with some tomato paste and stuff mixed in. But at any rate, well, thank you for that. I'm glad. I pride myself on my cooking. But I'm an Italian guy. What do you want? We like to cook. We enjoy cooking. And my wife doesn't like to cook, so she cleans the dishes when she can. She hasn't really been able to recently, but she cleans the dishes. You just came back from Nashville.
Yep.
And had a big conference about election reform. Tell us about that. Tell us about how it got started, and tell us about how you came to go there.
Well, I guess how it got started is a lot of activists are starting to come together. It was formed by a guy named Bernie Ellis, who I'm not even sure what his organization is all about. I haven't really seen him except in the last month, really be active in the movement. But it did include 200 people from all over the country, people that are very active, for instance, in Ohio in the recount and doing the litigation. People like David Cobb were there, Cliff Arnebeck, Bob Fotrakis.
Now, who are these people?
Well, David Cobb is the Greens Party presidential candidate. Bob Fotrakis is an independent journalist with a group called Free Press, freepress.org, and they have really been the most independent media to really cover the truth about election fraud in 2004.
Well, you're not going to get anything from the mainstream That's for sure.
No. But they do a great job in covering all the media. They have the videos, and they write articles, and they have journalists write articles. And Bob is just really, he fires you up because he knows the most about what's been going on, you know, just pretty much of any journalist out there. And I was also impressed with Brad Friedman of Brad Blog. He's also an independent media journalist who, of all things, got one of his articles recently published in the Moscow Times. So, way to go, Brad. Big shout out to you.
Moscow, Russia. You know, because that's the thing. I lived in Moscow, Idaho, or I lived near Moscow, Idaho, which was always kind of funny. That's in Idaho just by the border of Washington, near the city of Pullman.
Right.
So, but when I hear the Moscow Times, that's what I think. Do they have Pravda anymore? I think they still have Pravda, but I don't think it's an official government organ anymore.
Because
we have Pravda here in the States, but that's another story.
I don't know if they do or not. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. But go ahead.
I'm sorry, sir. What went on at this conference?
Well, you know, it was kind of organized very last minute, so that part of it, you can't really say it had a common theme. It was 3 days. The main theme... well, not the main theme. On Friday, there were people speaking on subjects such as an overview of the sort of the big picture. And we did get five-minute discussions from like five or six states, people like from Pennsylvania, from Georgia, from Florida. My problem with that was that they didn't give enough time to the actual states that were doing the actual audits. And they gave way too much time to people that were talking about sort of high-level stuff that most of the people in the conference already knew about. So I would have probably done it a little differently. But overall, it was good. You had people like Kathy Dopp, who published the exit poll study. I don't know if you saw that just came out.
I saw a thing about that. Yeah, about how the exit poll showed Kerry clearly winning in Ohio by like 4 or 5 percentage points.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kathy's collected a group of some of the finest PhDs, statisticians, and professors all across the country. In fact, one of the other people that spoke I was damn impressed with was Josh Middledorf, who is was working with Kathy on doing the analysis. They effectively challenged the rebuttal to the Matovsky report, the rebuttal being that... And let me see if I can get this straight. It had to do with the percentages of Republican voters versus Democratic in the exit poll. So they did a statistical analysis of that, and they came up with the possibility also on top of that that it was pretty much a very low probability that the exit poll would shift from, you know, 3% for Kerry to 2.5% for Bush.
Right. That's a 5.5% switch. And, of course, that was one of the things that the Republicans were successful in doing in 2000 was in making the exit poll people look bad, because the exit polls originally in Florida showed Gore winning by a fairly large margin. And then, of course, you know, George told his brother Jeb to get down there and put the fix in. And that's when everything kind of fell apart.
It's pretty sad when you don't trust, you know, 50 to 100 professors doing a peer review of a paper that, according to Kathy Dopp, has never been challenged
right.
on any substantive issue. Her website, just by the way, is www.us. It's either countvotes or votecounts.com. So visit that and go read the report. But, you know, if the exit poll was enough to get the Ukrainians in the streets and demand a better election, what I don't understand, Joe, maybe you can say, is why are the Americans so complacent about this?
Well, because we've had it for so long. I mean, that we're so self-centered, not just in this country in general, but with our own personal lives. We are so self-centered that we really just kind of assume that these things are being done and taken care of. In the Ukraine, they haven't had that much experience. If and when they get a democracy, you know, 80, 90, 100 years down the road, you know, you wouldn't have seen the sort of outpouring on the streets that you saw at the last election. Here, we just take it for granted so much, and we don't want anything to interfere with our lives. It's too much work. It's too much work. And meanwhile, the people who are looking to steal the elections and steal our money and steal our rights and steal basically everything from us, they're working their asses off. And that's why we're getting our asses kicked right now, because they're willing to work for it. And for the most part, while there are people who are willing to work on this issue like you are, the bulk of the people are rather like, we don't care, I've got to go to work in the morning.
Well, here's the thing, Joe. Six people in Cobb County were able to overturn the asinine putting of stickers that evolution is a theory on textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
If six citizens can change that kind of craziness, what I don't understand is we had 200 people at this conference. I've put together, along with some other folks, a listing of all 120-some-odd organizations that list themselves as election reform organizations. Now, you do the math on that, 120 organizations with all the people behind every organization. Aside from the media not covering this, I would call this a very significant citizen groundswell.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know about the Baker-Carter Commission, which is happening April 18th. I got invited, by the way.
The whitewash?
Yeah, well, a lot of people...
Come on, it's got James Baker in
yes,
it. Come on.
And I agree with you. And in fact, my personal theory is that Jimmy Carter joined that because he saw this as being the end of democracy. I don't know if you know, he stepped down from the Carter Center. And the timing was just kind of odd because he did that March 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is April 8th or 10th.
I saw an article about that in a local paper.
But I caught the... They call it the Federal Election Commission. I caught these guys in a lie. I got a form letter allowing me to sit in the audience. Now, by the way, they're letting me sit in the audience, but by closed-circuit TV. So what does that tell you? It tells you they're afraid of the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They made me type in or give them my Social Security number and date of birth, which means they're vetting the audience, so that means they're afraid of us. And then the third thing that was so interesting was they had on the letterhead at the very bottom, it said, in association with James Baker III Public Policy Institute, the Carter Center, and electionline.org. So I promptly called the Carter Center and spoke to a woman, Tanisha, in Democracy, which I tape-recorded the phone call. She said, Phyllis, we are absolutely 100% not affiliated with this American University private commission.
Mm.
Carter is his own individual. He doesn't even represent the Carter Center anymore. She said, absolutely not. So why would they put in association with on a letterhead?
Well,
so right off,
Jimmy,
right off the
Jimmy
bat, they're
involved.
Lying to us, and they're using associations that don't really exist.
Well, it's just another whitewash. It's like the blame the CIA thing that they just had for 9/11. You know, blame everybody but the Bush administration.
But why would Carter, who is one of my personal heroes, I tell you what, I'm gonna really be depressed if Carter is naively sucked into this thing, and all they do is screw around with HAVA and federal and just not really do anything. I think this commission was formed as a distraction to what's obviously a very big and growing citizen movement. But my problem with that is I don't think that's the case. I think Carter is terribly uneducated. I think it's our job in the election reform community to literally hand walk or fax or FedEx materials to Carter's secretary, which I have it on my hard drive. I guess I'll have to throw it on my website. Look for it on countpaperballots.com. But you can send him materials, which I have been doing. I sent him a 48-page fax with a handwritten letter about that my dad was a big fan of yours, Jimmy Carter, and I really want to see you support the citizens because we're all crying out. This is not just – this conference was not 200 crackpots. It was 200 of the smartest people that I've ever met in my life. And these people have done significant work. I myself have done significant work proving election fraud in Georgia.
Well, you know, it's like I said, mostly you're fighting the apathy of the American public, and that's a far more difficult thing. That's even far more difficult to fight than someone who's a fierce opponent, because you know what a fierce opponent's going to do.
Yeah.
And you have a battle plan for that. But someone who doesn't care, you know, how do you motivate them if they don't think it makes
right.
any difference?
But Joe, the American people love them or hate them. We don't really need them. The Bush people didn't need the American public to wrestle their way to power.
Well, they counted on the apathy. You know what? One of the things that the Republicans did, and Mike Malloy talked about this, is that they made the political world so vile and nasty that only a certain group of people would even want to get involved with it. And if the Democrats fight back, then, you know, everyone says, well, you know, the Democrats are just as bad as Republicans. So it's a lose-lose situation for Democrats. If they don't fight back, they get railroaded. If they do fight back, they destroy the confidence in the system overall.
I'd rather get railroaded. I'd rather have someone fire me for being an activist mm-hmm. than to live in a society that is essentially a dictatorship full of gay-hating genocide people.
To be honest, I think this is a stage the country has to go through. I think that we really have to hit rock bottom, that we may have to have a foreign power in some way, shape, or form overthrow the government, whether it's financially, economically, or militarily, which I doubt anybody will be able to do that militarily. I think that's got to happen. I think we need to be humbled in the same way that Germany was humbled after World War II.
Well, I guess I'm the eternal optimist. I believe 5 or 10 people, some computers, and a good idea can stop a lot of things.
Well, you're active yourself. Now, let's talk about what you specifically are doing, because you, you know, I've been helping you out in this project, making some copies and doing
You've been indispensable, Joe.
But we've been, but basically what you've been doing, now there are 159 counties in Georgia.
Yep.
And you have got, you've called, not all of them, but most all of them, and you've gotten the actual receipts. I hate to use that term.
No,
but you've
don't
gotten,
say receipts.
You've got the
I've gotten what the, is a
what comes out of the Diebold machine.
It's like a cash register tape right. Summary. I did not get the ballots because one thing you should know is the Diebold machines never print a ballot,
right.
A paper ballot.
Right.
That's a problem. But let me tell you. Let me back up and tell
but
you.
The point is, but the point okay. is, the Diebold machines do have a printer in them, and one
yes.
of the things that, in fact, Kathy Cox said that in order to have a printed ballot, that we have to have all this fancy equipment and stuff like that
oh.
on the Diebold machines, and that's just not true. The printer's right there. You can literally print out a ballot.
I love Kathy Cox's quote. It's not as easy as plugging in an HP printer. Well, hate to break the news to you, Kathy. There's a serial port, and aside from Diebold being a monopolistic, greedy company that's got Georgia in its clutches, other than that one fact, it is as easy as plugging in a printer.
And if
we pass legislation in other states, it'll definitely percolate down to Georgia. But here's what I want to say about the open records request. I did an open records request in December to 159 counties. I first did it to the clerks
so
and superior courts.
So you did it for every county?
Every county. And I also did it to A through H and W because I didn't have enough money to buy all the counties. It is quite expensive for a citizen to buy the records because you have to pay 25 cents a record, and then you have to pay an hourly rate. And it has, in some cases, for instance, Fulton County was like $1,500. DeKalb quoted me $5,000, which was a total riot. So I'm thinking DeKalb has a lot to hide. But I've already purchased counties like Clinch County, Putnam, Meriwether, Catoosa, Chattooga. But anyway, what I wanted to say was that let me just give you some statistics before anything I've discovered already. This is just a fact of the 2004 election. 11 counties between 2000 and 2004 increased their Democratic percentages.
Hmm.
148 counties increased the Republican. So that was kind of the first number that jumped out at me, was that Georgia, by the way, for 132 years was Democratic House, Democratic mm-hmm. Senate, and it was not until 2002 that we were able to reverse everything, meaning Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican Governor, and Republican for President.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, if you look, let's just say you move the timeline back 10 years, Georgia was, you know, Democrat President, Democrat Governor, Democrat House, Democrat. So essentially in 5 to 10 years, they've managed to flip Georgia 100% for the Republicans.
Well, it's been trending that way for a long
time.
No,
that's not a valid argument, Joe, because what you have, for instance, in a lot of the lower races, is just a propensity to vote Democrat. So when you start to see some of those lower races flipping, that's when I started to get a little nervous. But anyway, that was the statistical thing that was kind of jumping out at me. Let's talk about Putnam County. Putnam County voted 50-50 in the last election. 50 for Gore, 54 Bush.
This is the 2000, you mean?
2000. 2004, Putnam voted 65 Bush, 35. Now, it gets better. The increase in registered voters in that county was 2%. So not only have you converted registered Democrats to Republican, you had to win not, you know, all of the new registered voters you had to win as a Republican. You had to convert some Democrats over. I mean, the statistical odds of the 15 percentage point swing in such a wild direction Putnam is really on my hot to investigate list.
How did the lower races go? Was it as big a swing for Republicans in, say, the Senate races and the congressional races?
You know, Joe, my head is swimming with numbers, and I didn't bring my data. But you know what? I will send you an email follow up so you can get that.
Because that's an indicator. Because if they're going to go Republican all the way, they're going to go Republican all the way. But it doesn't make sense for them to vote for Bush for president and then to go ahead and vote for all your Democratic candidates. And in the Congress and in the Senate and for the local issues.
Well, let me characterize this and summarize sort of the categories of problems we're finding. The first one is what I call a phantom vote. A phantom vote is you look at what they call a dairy machine recap sheet, and it tells you how many machine votes there were and how many actual electors showed up via, you know, they signed into the poll book, how many people showed up at the poll. You can't have more machine votes than people that showed up.
Right.
Well, I have precinct by precinct, machine by machine. I have these recap forms. I mean, it's probably going on like 30 or 40 different situations, and I've only audited like four counties. Where the number of machine votes is higher by 5 votes, 3 votes, to someone else it might seem minuscule, but multiplied by thousands of precincts, it adds up to some serious votes.
Right.
And so the phantom vote was something also that Ellen Thiessen identified. She compared Kathy Cox's voter history file with the actual reported outcome and came up with 33,000 extra phantom votes, more machine votes than people votes in the state.
And most of those, you assume, are defaulting to Bush.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so let's get back to how we prove quote-unquote fraud. I tell people that I'm auditing the state, and that rather than proving fraud, which implies intent, what I'm proving is just plain out inaccuracy. I think I can make the Georgia election invalid merely by pointing out that Diebold, A, makes your process more complicated, B, there's no checks and balances, meaning there's nothing because there's no paper ballot, there's nothing for me to hand count.
There's no paper trail, right.
So it's basically physically impossible to audit, so I'm auditing what I can. It would be like doing an autopsy of somebody who was in a very bad, like whose body was completely burned. It would be, it becomes very difficult to see, what all the causes of death might have been or whatever.
You know, I keep saying this, and let me break in here because you've been talking about this, and you talked about, we'll discuss it a little later, but someone who, a Republican who was paid basically to rig the vote. And my feeling has been what we ought to do is we ought to pay somebody to do that here. Not necessarily rig it for Democrats, but we ought to do something really ridiculous, like somebody rig the vote so that Mickey Mouse wins the governorship of Georgia. Something that's so totally outrageous. I call it a P.T. Barnum moment.
Yeah.
Moment. Something that's so totally outrageous that proves how easily the system can be rigged.
I can already hear the Republicans, though, Joe. Oh, that was human error. Or, oh, that's not relevant. Or, oh, that doesn't turn the race over. My whole point is I would love for somebody to do that, too. But we don't even have to do that. We have that kind of problems already existing in the 2004 election.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, the problem with that is you don't want to condone the kind of hacking the Republicans did. I mean, Democrats, my problem with Democrats is that we don't have a backbone. And we start to play the dirty trick. We try to, but we never quite get as good at the dirty tricks of the Republicans. There's some element here of rising above their chatter. Just like the Schiavo case, right?
Well, there's
rise above the chatter, stay out of it, and let them make fools of themselves.
Well, but see, the problem is they're not making fools of themselves. They've done things that under normal circumstances should have gotten anybody kicked out of office. I mean, the way the whole Iraq war has been run, never mind the way they got us into it, the way the whole thing has been run, God, that they're mishandling of the economy, gas prices going through the roof the way they are. I mean, they've gotten away with shit that I can't believe. They've gotten away with
it. You're saying they've gotten away with it. Again, this is my optimist. I think that they're close to a breaking point. I think between the Guckert-Gannon thing, between the public opinion on the war, which is very low right now. I mean, I went to Fort Bragg where there were 5,000 families, and a lot of the, I don't know what percentage, but I know that speaker after speaker after speaker were military families speaking out against the war. The people that were protesting us were 50. So it was 5,000 people to 50. In Fort Bragg, which is a heavy, heavy, heavy military base.
Right.
So I'm here to tell you the numbers are just really trending our way, and I think that what we as Democrats need to do, and I know this is my personal approach, is to get get punitive. And we need to get punitive. We need to grow a backbone. We need to stop trying to think we can do anything legislative. In a country where there's unelected officials, you will not be able to pass laws. You have to fight legally. You have to fight with grassroots action. And you have to get people where it matters.
As was proved in the Schiavo case, I refuse to say Schiavo.
Yeah.
Schiavo. She's Italian, Schiavo. At any rate, the judiciary still has some strength.
And hate the judiciary.
And the thing about it is that the judiciary, thank you, I'll say it correctly, that called all the shots were mainly Republicans. They weren't hardcore leftist Democrats that ruled in favor of the husband. They were mostly Republicans. So
yeah, they've outraged.
The main reason they voted the way they did was because they were protecting their turf. They knew that if this bill got into law and was upheld, then they would become irrelevant. Because as soon as something happened that the Congress didn't like, they could write a law specifically to overturn that. And you can't have that. The judiciary knows that they would become completely and utterly useless under those circumstances. So they're going to fight to protect their turf, which is why the legal way of doing this for the election reform would be a better way. Let me, before we go on a break, and we're going to have to go on a break here for a second.
Okay.
You talked about the polls and something I know you'll agree with, and I've been saying this for a while. If the elections are rigged, what the hell difference do the polls make? If the elections are rigged, the polls mean nothing. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with more with Phyllis Huster on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. You've read by now that one of the U.S. Senators from Texas, John Cornyn, a Bush Rove protege, joined his Texas House colleague, Tom the Exterminator DeLay, in threatening federal judges who don't agree with the Lone Star State Mafia. Cornyn's treasonous and deadly dangerous statements even awoke the normally low-key New York Times, which said, quote, "It was appalling when the House Majority Leader threatened political retribution against judges who did not toe his extremist political line. But when a second important Republican stands up and excuses murderous violence against judges as an understandable reaction to their decisions, then it is time to get really scared. It happened on Monday in a moment that was horrifying even by the rock-bottom standards of the campaign that Republican zealots are conducting against the nation's judiciary." Unquote. Men like Cornyn and DeLay think that they're above the law and implicitly condone acts of violence before retreating behind a white noise of doublespeak doled out by their aides to indignantly claim that these men, who endanger individuals and our democracy, didn't really mean what they say. Bushevics such as DeLay and Cornyn want to spread their dangerous pro-domestic terrorism rhetoric and recant it, too. Here in Chicago, where BuzzFlash is located, the husband and mother of a federal judge were killed, while white supremacist Matt Hale tried to hire a hitman to kill the same judge. Judge Greer, a loyal Republican and Baptist who ruled in favor of Terry Schiavo's husband, needs armed guards to protect himself against the deranged men and guns that John Cornyn condones with a wink and a nod. These are dangerous men. They are delirious with arrogant, delusional power. Yes, like Hitler, they think they are leading some master divine race that trumps the American Constitution and the rule of law. They are out to destroy democracy and the balance of power in the United States government. We wish no physical harm to John Cornyn, who has a checkered past as a politician and Supreme Court judge in Texas. We wish him the best of health and hope no ill harm falls upon him. We are nonviolent, which distinguishes us from them. It's what distinguishes civilization from barbarians at the gate. We just wish Cornyn behind bars, where he belongs, for treason committed against our Constitution, our nation, and the well-being of our judicial branch. He can bunk down with Tom DeLay, as Cheney and Bush room next to them. They can play canasta together in their free time. But only allow them one phone call a week. We really don't want to hear from them again. The safety and security of our democracy depends on it. Once the Republicans disdained big government, now they're an oppressive government promoting violence against our judges. It's like living in Colombia, where the drug cartel runs the country. All good men and women should do whatever they can to see these men defeated at the polls, tried, and imprisoned. They are too dangerous to be let loose among the general public. Cornyn is a former Texas Attorney General and state Supreme Court judge. Yet, he has given the green light to wackos to attack members of our judiciary. He is the one who must be held accountable under the American rule of law. And at the very least, that makes him the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I want to hear from you. Email me, comment on the blog. And also, send me your stupid boss tricks. I keep getting them. I'm not sure if we're going to have time to do one this week because Phyllis is going to take up pretty much the whole show, but that's cool. But send them to me, and I'll use them. We'll get them on the air. Stupid boss tricks. Let everybody know that it's not just the government that can be a bunch of incompetent bureaucratic fools. That's why I do this, Phyllis. I do the stupid boss tricks because the right wing is always talking about how the government is stupid and incompetent and all that stuff. And the reality is that they're just as incompetent in the workplace, and I just want to use stupid boss tricks.
The only difference is they get paid more money.
They get paid more money, and they're less accountable.
Yes.
Because these corporate CEOs are not accountable to anybody. Even the shareholders are scared of them. Okay.
Hey, I have a question for you, Joe.
Yeah, okay, I have an answer for you.
How does Kathy eat chicken soup with chopsticks?
Oh, that's because we're using udon noodles.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah, udon noodles are Japanese noodles, very, very thick.
Kathy, how do you get the juice of the soup in your mouth with chopsticks? Oh, you have a spoon. Okay.
She has a spoon.
Mystery solved.
We're not total barbarians. That's good chicken soup, too.
Looks good.
Yeah, that's my own. That's
we
my
have
own.
To talk about food, Joe.
Yeah, not now. Not now.
Okay.
We got election stuff to talk about. We can talk about...
Oh, election stuff.
About how
Kathy Cox purchased $50 million worth of technology that didn't work?
Oh, of course. Well, you know, it'll work just fine as far as the Republicans are concerned. Well, it works just the way they want. You know, and I keep saying California's next because they got rid of that Secretary of State who was dead set against the Diebold machines. And, you know, Arnold gets to appoint, you know, a buddy of his who is going to probably push to have the Diebold into California.
Well, so. I got news for you. California has a couple of lawsuits waiting for him. I know the man that litigated the Diebold lawsuit and won $2.6 million in California. And I know for a fact that that California has some more lawsuits coming its way. And, in fact, it would be healthy to say that Georgia has similar interests.
Well, you yourself are going to get ready to do some lawsuits, aren't you, on these issues?
Officially, I'm doing an audit of the Georgia 2004 election.
No, we're not going to get into that then. We don't want to start any counterinsurgency. It's not like anybody really listens to the show anyway.
I know, but I want to tell my Donna Curling Choice Point story.
Okay.
Will you let me do that, even though it's sort of about elections?
Okay, go ahead.
Shortly into doing my audit where I was buying records and things, I met someone online who represented herself as, you know, somebody interested in election reform, big Kerry supporter, blah, blah, blah. And the more I got to know her, she goes, well, I guess I should let you know I'm the wife of a very large Atlanta company. I go, well, which company
is that? She's the wife of a company? Hang on, say that.
I'm sorry. The wife of an executive.
Okay.
The wife of a president of a very large Atlanta company.
Although, I'll tell you, I know a few women who wouldn't mind being the wives of companies.
Yeah.
I mean, they would like the
well, you
the
might
variety.
As well be. You might as well be married to the company. But so... this was all very odd timing because this is about 2 weeks before the whole Choice Point thing hit the Atlanta papers.
Right. For those of you who don't know, by the way, Choice Point is like they do credit checks. And they had a whole bunch of their records just stolen.
Yeah, millions really have been affected by Choice Point for identity theft.
Right.
And the worst part, Joe, was that they knew about the problem in October. They did nothing about it. And the president, Doug Curling and Derek Smith, sold their stock in November to the tune of $20 million. So they're being investigated by the SEC, okay? This all hit the papers a couple weeks ago.
And I hate to be so cynical about it, but you know they're never going to see a day's worth of real serious jail time.
Yes, yes, they will. You know why? Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer, who has been the one to drive a lot of the SEC.
Attorney General of New York, right?
Yes. The last thing I read is with Bernie Ebers that they're threatening 85 years in jail. Now, I doubt he'll get 85 years in jail, but they're no longer threatening the $1 million, $2 million fines anymore. They're now getting into serious jail time.
For guys who've stolen, you know, $90-$100 million, what is $1 million fine? It means nothing.
They have to go to jail. That's the bottom line.
That's where they should be going. You know, if a guy has to spend 10 years in prison for robbing $20 from a liquor store.
Yeah.
Someone who robs $20 million, even though they didn't hold a gun to somebody's head. Somebody robs $20, $30 million, ought to go to jail for a real friggin' long time.
Well, here's what's cool. So she approaches me and says that she's willing to help me do some LexisNexis searches, that she's willing to help me with some of the legal research I needed to do. I said, great. She goes, my husband owns, you know, a company that has LexisNexis in it. But, you know, just to warn you, Phyllis, Choice Point has a little bit of a rough reputation. I said, okay, let me go read this Greg Palast book, and I'll get back to you. So I go and I read a couple of chapters, and I find out Choice Point was the company that bought a company called DBT that did all the felon scrubbing in Florida during the 2000 election.
Right.
So right away I was not feeling really good, but I said, okay, I'll give this woman the benefit of the doubt, being the eternal optimist that I am. I go to her house, I bring a lot of my data, and she sits there the whole time, and rather than really ask substantive questions about how she can help me, she just starts taking names. Who's doing that? Who's doing that? What's his name? What's
so
her name?
She was a spy.
She was totally a spy. And the worst part is she walks to my car, and I didn't know back then that she was a spy. I just thought she was. The two things she said to me was, I feel guilty for this big house. She lives in a mansion in Alpharetta. I feel guilty for it. And the second thing she said is, oh, you know, I'd love to contribute to your organization. I said, well, why don't you just throw a house party? I felt bad taking money from her. You know, like, I'm always someone who just wants people to throw house parties. That way you can invite people over, and you can raise even more money than if you write me a check. And then it's a win-win for everybody because you get to have this social event. So I ended up not taking a penny from her, aside from the fact my intuition was telling me there was something funny about it. Then guess what? 2 weeks go by. I don't hear a damn thing. Then she sends me an email. I can't help you. I've decided I'm going to work with the legislative folks in Georgia. They're going to go much further, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? The legislative folks wrote this wonderful bill called the Vote Count Protection Act that's all about getting a paper ballot and getting it counted, which I really support 100%. That's why my website is countpaperballots.com. But the bottom line is they couldn't even find a sponsor for it, which is what happens when you have unelected officials.
Right. As a matter of fact, what happened was, not in the most recent one, but the session beforehand, they got the bill up to a certain point, and then it was killed, and it was killed by the Democrats because Kathy Cox had placed so much political capital into these Diebold machines that she basically used a little bit of strong arming to say, don't support this bill, get away from it, and the Democrats who submarined this thing. So
so. Push comes to shove, it's the Friday after the big news comes out that Choice Point has these identity theft. And then all of a sudden, the Atlanta Journal, really, they did a great job breaking this story. They must have really hated Choice Point because not only did they break the story that this guy, Derek and Doug, had sold $20 million worth of stock, when they knew something was going on, rather than fix the problem, they're selling stock because they know their company's going down, right? That's something a typical CEO would do, is to cover their tracks and get their stock and their money before the whole thing crashes.
That's what the Enron executives did. And
bingo.
In fact, and they turned around, and not only did they sell their stock, but they prevented the workers there from selling their
stock. It's sinister. So let me just drop the bomb here. I get an email the Friday that hits the paper from Donna Curling saying, now she's already said she's not working with me. She must have gotten an email that I had posted about a Kathy Cox being at some Decatur town hall meeting, which, by the way, Kathy Cox walked out of that town hall meeting, but that's a whole other story. And Donna Curling writes me an email, we're 100% innocent. You don't know me, but when you find out about my personality, you'll find out that, you know, me and my husband are 100% innocent. She's totally playing the guilty, you know, the guilty party on the email.
The victim.
I hope things are going well. Good luck in your pursuits, Phyllis. I'm like, does this woman think I'm really this stupid? So I took her email and I wrote an editorial called What's Wrong with American Families? And it's all about the quote-unquote, you know, mob wife. It's like that woman that's married to a man that's living in a million-dollar house, and she never one day scratches her head saying, where does all this money come from, and who are we screwing to get it?
You know, I've always been of the opinion that people who make that kind of money, you know, with the exception of, like, say, professional ball players or, you know, people who do their work in the totally in the public eye like that, when people are getting tens, hundreds of millions of dollars a year, that they do not come by it honestly. There is no possible way they come by all of that money
behind
honestly.
Every CEO, you really need to ask the question, how criminal were they to be there?
Right.
Now, there are some good corporations out there, okay, you know, that do good things, that have really honorable CEOs. So I'm not going to tell you, because I own my own company, and I contributed heavily to charities and other things. So I don't want to trash corporations in general. I just think that we need better oversight.
We need tremendous more oversight. I mean, I'm a capitalist, you know, and I believe in having big corporations and having small corporations. But the bottom line is that the government has to take a stronger role in regulating them. Because otherwise, when they get carried away, you see what happens when they get carried away. And it's bad for the country. It's not even good for them in the long run, because eventually they get enough people pissed off that they come out with the torches and the pitchforks.
Yeah.
And they don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. Well, We're trying to prevent that happening.
Donna experienced that. I mean, I made the mistake of posting her email on an online community of which she was a part. And I felt kind of bad about it, and I took it down later because I'm not a mean-spirited person, and I was just really angry at her. And when I posted it very quickly after that, I took it down. But what was weird was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution posted their name, their home address, and their phone number. So their kids started getting death threats.
Oh,
they started getting emails. And if you send an email right now to dmac@charterinternet.com, it's disabled. They've canceled the account. But what I love about it is the divine ability of citizens to say, we are not taking it anymore. And you know what, Donna and Doug? You need to experience identity theft.
Well,
and thank God it was the Journal Constitution that did it to you.
It's interesting because I was just, before I left for...
I mean, that's a success story.
Before I left, the Journal Constitution is such a horrid little rag that when I was leaving for New York, I saw the headline of I call it the urinal constipation in the newspaper thing, and it was like very little. This is the headline says little chance of U.S. Pope, power and money, work against us. And I'm like, what a whiny little headline! Isn't it a little? You know, we're too powerful. They don't want to have a pope from America because we're too rich and powerful. And I oh my God, is this what they're doing? These people are paid how much friggin' money to write this stuff?
Well, it's funny, as a citizen with no press that you can count on, with unelected legislative, with an executive branch that has usurped all powers, even the judiciary, Bush has taken over at the federal level. The only place that we as citizens can fight is at the county level and hoping that some honest judge will hear your story. For example, when I went to ask for my open records data, Joe, guess what kind of letter I got back from Kathy Cox?
What? Oh, she... go ahead.
You remember this one?
I want you to tell the story. Go ahead.
So I sent a letter saying, I need this kind of data, this kind of data, this kind of data, all of which was in paper form. And then the fourth request was, by the way, I need the CD that represents the actual ballots, so basically the electronic data files that come out of the Diebold machines. That's the only way we can tell that the paper results match what really happened inside the machine. Not what really happened, but one version of what happened inside the machine, because I think there's going to be downstream fraud from the CD. What I call downstream, meaning that they tweaked it, you know, within some report software rather than in the source files. Well, sure enough, her staff, Kathy Rogers, sent back a letter to the superintendents, to all 159. By the time I had faxed my thing the night before, by 3 o'clock the next afternoon, they had faxed all 159 counties or emailed them. And so then their letter had this paragraph that said, secondly, we cannot release the CD because to release it would compromise terrorist acts or safety and security, and the non-disclosure of which is necessary for life and liberty. Basically, they're pulling something out of their Georgia code, ass, to try to say, you know, they're just pulling something out of their ass because it's bullshit. I am allowed, according to the Georgia Open Records Law, I am allowed this data. So we're going to fight that one pretty hard.
And you think you hopefully get a judge to issue in your favor?
Well, I think we're going to do a shock and awe campaign, and that's all I'm going to say is we're going to do a shock and awe campaign.
Now, how is now the CD-ROM that you mentioned? That's basically all the records that you're getting by paper, but it's all in one CD-ROM. Is that correct?
Yes and no. There's a Microsoft Access database that actually comprises the records that represent the ballots. And there are a bunch of other ancillary files, like the ballot definition file.
Okay.
That's important to me because that's where the default to Bush might be.
Well, let's get into this. Let's go on kind of the same subject, but in a different area, because like you mentioned very early on, there are a lot of different groups doing election reform stuff. But the problem is that everybody seems to be fighting each other.
Thank
as
you.
Much as you know, and I played this, and I won't play the clip again. Jello Biafra from Wake Up and Smell the Noise talks about how because we're always backstabbing each other and because we're fighting amongst each other, that's what gives these corporations and that's what gives the Bush people the power to do the things they do because we're not organized. Why the hell can't we get our act together? Why is it that you always have, you know, and I call it the People's Front of Judea versus the Judean People's Front. If you remember from Monty Python's
that's cute.
The Life of Brian movie, they had all these different factions who were fighting the Romans, but they were fighting each other as much as they were fighting the Romans. And Brian wanted to join the Judean People's Front, and he accidentally called them the People's Front of Judea, and they got mad at him, you know. And it just seems the same way. I mean, I was with the other group of people, and they were nice people, and they were doing nice things. They wanted to work in the legislative area. You're working in a different area, and I've done some work for you, too.
Yeah.
I also do some work for the DeKalb Democrats, and they have their own little infighting problems. What the hell is wrong with us?
Well, my attitude to that is a good leader can help unify. And the closest we've come to that is Howard Dean. He had Greens in the same room as, you know, extreme what I would consider to be extreme moderate Democrats, people who were really focused on fiscal responsibility, people mm-hmm. who by the skin of their chinny chin chin might actually be a Republican, in the same room as people who were like extreme, you know, lefties and extreme liberals. And they were all cooperating. We were all coming up with similar issues. The problem with what you're talking about, the infighting, is that and it's real, real simple. I'm kind of glad it's there, is that Republicans don't really want to do a lot of thinking for themselves. So they are very apt to follow a Karl Rove script. Whereas what makes a Democrat is that we go outside of tradition. We think for ourselves. We're very independent. We don't play by the game. We don't play by the rules. We don't screw people in the corporate world just to get ahead. And so in some ways, by the very nature of our value system, we're not going to lend ourselves to movement building.
It hurts us strategically, though, because
it does, because we don't have leadership. So my whole point is we need leaders. We need people that are going to unify. And rather than let this person say, I'm into hand counting paper ballots, and this person say, I'm into 10% audits, you know, that kind of thing has been dividing the election reform committee. I was on a conference call tonight where five people wanted and five people didn't, and we came to a screeching halt. And my thought is a good leader would say, guys, let's table that issue. We'll figure it out. We'll find a way to write the language in such a way that both people are placated. But let's step backwards and say, what's our strategic goal? And let's march forward for that.
Listen, we better start getting our act together quickly, though, because, you know, when the Republicans had their little thing about the judicial activists, they had a little conference there that some writer got into. They were starting to quote Joe Stalin about how to solve certain problems. They say, you know, no man, no problem. They're starting to talk about killing people. You had that senator go up there and make a threat against judges, basically by saying that it's understandable why people would want to kill
them. Joe, they're
scared
and they're cornered animals. And I got to tell you something. The dam is about to break, and it's going to break in our favor. And I'm here to tell you, when they start threatening, it's all poppycock. You know why? Because Rumsfeld, with his little transferring of the budgets to the Pentagon, is fighting. Infighting with the FBI, infighting with the CIA. They actually have more enemies inside the American government than any of the Democrats.
Then why haven't they spoken out yet?
They're working on a big Watergate style. That's what I've heard.
They're going to blow everything. But we don't have the press behind us this time.
Well, you don't need the press. Here's why. You don't need the press.
Because you got people like me.
Well, independent media is really, to be honest with you, having Brad, a blog, be quoted in the Moscow Times. Now, if it were showing up on the BBC, people might respect it more. But the bottom line is, it's a matter of time before he gets on the BBC. It was also, by the way, covered in Cuba. Not that that helps any, but the whole point is you don't really. Everybody gives a lot of credence to the media. Okay, I don't watch news anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay,
neither do I. I stopped a long time ago.
I don't watch. So I'm not somebody that's motivated. The internet is our medium. What we need is a leader to harness the internet to drive citizens to action. And a small example is we've started really covering up Jimmy Carter. We started sending him a lot of stuff about election reform. And I was the one that said it on a conference call, and a couple other guys put it on their blog. Guess what? Carter's being slammed with faxes, letters, just stacks and stacks of paper showing that there was election fraud. So he's going to wake up and smell the coffee here soon.
But he's already – I've already heard him go on record when he talked about the 2000 election. He said that – His election watch committee couldn't have even watched in Florida because it didn't even meet the minimum qualifications and standards that he set.
I'm watching Jimmy like a hawk. I think that he's got something up his sleeve. I think he joined the commission to keep it from railroading us. And I think that he is such a strong voice and so respected by both parties that I think I'm watching him. I'm not giving up on him yet.
Well, let's just assume – let's just hope that nobody decides to whack him. Because I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, you know what? They could whack it just about anybody. But here's the cool part. The cool part is they're really not smart enough to, Joe. I'll be honest with you. I see those guys as sitting up in their ivory towers, and they really think that the tower has a foundation. And they don't realize the foundation is crumbling, and their entire power structure is about to crumble.
Okay. Well, let's let's take a break here. I'm not sure exactly how much time we have left, but let's take a break here, and we'll come back for just a very short while to finish up. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Okay, we've only got a little more than 2 minutes to go here before the end. We weren't sure about the timing, so that's okay. Phyllis, you had a couple of announcements you make before we say goodbye.
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody to check out the website at www.countpaperballots.com, and that every Sunday from 12 to 4 in Vinings, Georgia, we have a citizen audit of the 2004 elections. And the phone number for that, if you want to attend, 770-432-0199. And separately, I want to get you citizens out there, get you active, and show up and participate in proving that the election was stolen.
Okay, that's 770-432-0199. And, of course, you can always email joevec@bellsouth.net, and I will naturally forward it over to Phyllis at her home address. So what do you have an address that you want them to write to, or should they just send it to me?
Just send it to you.
Okay, that'll be fine. Phyllis, I want to thank you for being on the show here, and maybe you can come on down and we can do it again sometime.
Joe, you're a genius, and I think your show is great,
thank you.
I'm really appreciative that you let me be on it.
I always like having people on here because it makes the time go by better. You have no idea how much of a pain in the ass it is to try to sit here and talk for 20, 25 minutes at a time. It's very, very difficult. Did you see any of the Popopalooza, by the way?
No.
As I was calling it?
No.
And you know I'm running for Pope.
Yes, really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I'm gonna call myself George Ringo the First.
Oh, there you go.
And I promise to excommunicate anybody I don't like unless they give me cash.
There you go.
And I promise to sick a couple of thugs on Robertson and Falwell and all those guys.
Good job.
And any blog that endorses me gets a $10,000 papal gift if I win.
How about sacking Cheney and a couple of those guys?
Well, we're not all powerful yet.
Okay.
We're not all powerful yet. You know, and of course I'll excommunicate them anyway.
There you go.
But
I think it would be worse to just send them to France and make them stay in the country of France for several years of their life.
Make them stay in France. Okay. Well, that's it for the Cup of Joe Radio Show. For Phyllis, for Kathy, and for Rick, who isn't here, this is Joe Vecchio saying goodbye. Bye.
Heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of dicks. That'll do it.
Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...